Welcome to week three of Hacks and Jacks. This is episode 115, Opportunity Knocks. It's Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. We're going to be talking about a ton of bats as we head into the season. Only a few more sleeps if you're listening to this on Monday when it's published. Only a couple more sleeps until the season starts on Thursday, March 27th. Scott, it's been quite a weekend for me. I've had several drafts. I've actually been on the clock in five different drafts in the past half hour. How's your weekend been from fantasy-wise and then just life in general?
You know, fantasy-wise, it's been quiet. Every league I was in made me do it all before the Tokyo series. So a little envious. Before we had these games, these drafts would all be spread out over the course of the entire month. Right. And they'd ramp up in the last 2 weeks, but they would be spread out. And now with these international series, you have a bunch of drafts that happen right before it and a bunch of drafts that happen right after it. And that's it. So embrace slow drafts. If you're out there and you do snake drafts, embrace the slow. Otherwise, you know, it's okay. Even if you don't get the international games, right? Like it's okay. Like, as we talked about in the last show, pitchers don't go out there that long, even when they're throwing no hitters, right? Like they just don't stay out there. Weird stuff happens with hitters because the teams, like the games count, but the teams still treat them very much like spring training games in that if anybody has anything happen, like if someone trims a nail too close to like the finger, like they'll be like, you better hit the showers, like, you know, get out of here. So a slow fantasy weekend because how crazy it was just a week ago.
Well, it wasn't a slow news weekend. We've had several different injuries to mostly pitchers. We're going to ignore them. We're going to let Nick and company handle most of the pitchers, talk pitcher injuries and all those things. But we're here to talk about bats. We've got a couple of injuries here. Colorado second baseman Tyro Estrada, he goes down with a broken wrist this week. The Rockies then react by acquiring Tyler Freeman from the Guardians, and they send Nolan Jones back to Cleveland, where he kind of developed in their farm system. Does that make either player relevant in fantasy?
No. So Tyler Freeman has had a couple ups and downs. He's a dude that just like puts a lot of balls in play, but he doesn't hit them very hard. And he hits most of them on the ground generally. So yeah, like being in Coors as a ground ball hitter with not a ton of power, you're going to be a ground ball hitter who hits a couple more singles maybe because the ball doesn't move as much and you get a little bit more wood on it. But yeah, he's just a guy that's an NL only play for sure. Nolan Jones, he's really tough because we had no, like if you knew what to expect from Nolan Jones this season, like you're lying. Right. Like we really don't know what to expect. Going back to Cleveland scares me a little, right? Like number one, it's clear, like I don't think the Rockies had any confidence in Nolan Jones. Like Tyler Freeman is not a guy that you would have to pay a lot to get, right? Like, yeah, he's only 25, but he was like a fringe top 100 prospect at one time several years ago when he graduated from prospect lists, but mostly because like he had a decent hit tool, but he doesn't hit like the comp that was out. You know, if you just go to Fangraphs and look at the comp they had at the time he graduated, they're like, oh, he's like a DJ LeMahieu type, right? Who, if you look at not the rabbit ball year, like doesn't hit that well. But DJ LeMahieu is like considerably better than what Tyler Freeman ended up becoming. So yeah, NL only play. Nolan Jones, he's now going to a roster that's a little crowded. So the Guardians do have like other outfielders, right? Like Nolan Jones probably goes to their bench when he had a much better shot at starting in Colorado. He also goes to a team that has a ton of lefties and switch hitters. Right. Like there's only two true right-handed hitters that are in the start, like in the regular everyday lineup. It's their second baseman, Gabriel Arias, and they have Lane Thomas. Other than that, everybody is switcher lefty. So he doesn't really have a clear role on this team. I guess like Jonkinsie Noel gets to, you know, be a platoon guy because there's so many lefties that, you know, when they do face a lefty, they need to get another righty in. Nolan Jones doesn't have that going for him. He's just a dude that strikes out too much and now isn't going to be in Coors half the time. So again, he's probably an AL only play and not a very good one, not a very exciting one. So yeah, there's all that. I think the more interesting thing that happens here is just, you know, maybe a little bit more opportunity for some of the guys that we're hoping do some cool stuff in the outfield for Colorado. Right. So this might give Hunter Goodman a chance to get in the lineup a little bit more. Hopefully, right. Or Sam Hilliard or Sean Bouchard, you know, again, Hunter Goodman's the one who's exciting because he's catcher eligible, but Bouchard, Hilliard, they're just guys, but in NL only, just guys who play in Coors have some sort of value. Same for Freeman in that sense. But I was hoping that this would actually give Adell Amador a shot, but it didn't. Or how fun would it have been for new Colorado Rocky Keston Hiura to get a shot? That, you know, 4 years ago, that would have been news. But otherwise, yeah, this is like a bunch of movement that for 12 teamers really didn't do anything unless, you know, again, unless you are in a 12 teamer with like two catchers and you stashed Hunter Goodman, and then maybe he gets more at bats, but we still have to see it before we can really believe that.
Yeah. And the Rockies also sent down Zach Veen this week, which was kind of the guy that I was really hoping they would give a chance to. Of course, that would be completely off brand for Colorado to let one of their top touted prospects get any at bats. But I do like that shout on Hunter Goodman, though. Catcher eligible in most formats and could see an increase at bat or an increase amount of at bats with the absence of Jones.
Yeah. And just, you know, I think the last thing we want to keep in mind here is that these are the Colorado Rockies. And historically, they're really bad at making decisions. They really don't do the right thing at any time. For, you know, no matter how easy the right decision would be to make. So our starting point should be they've probably done something that's not very good. Maybe that means Nolan Jones goes off. Maybe we don't know, but whatever the right decision was, it's probably not what happened. That's the starting point. Sorry, Rockies fans. But I don't have to apologize. And then they know they've been watching this.
Speaking of decision making, a little bit of an interesting decision from the Yankees here. Aaron Boone, in an interview earlier this week, mentioned that the leadoff hitters might not be exactly who most people are expecting. Jack Curry from the Yes Network tweeted about Austin Wells expecting to lead off versus right-handed pitching, while Paul Goldschmidt might get some leadoff reps against lefties. Does that affect your opinion of either guy here? And is there any concern over Anthony Volpe, who we thought might lead off?
So the most value that these guys get is probably from leading off. Like a catcher leading off is very interesting. So Austin Wells as a leadoff man, if this is true, right, is fairly interesting because volume, right? Catchers need volume. Very few catchers hit at the top of the order. In fact, I think the only one I can think that really gets close ever, JT Realmuto used to, but he doesn't anymore. And Adley Rutschman will hit second a lot. But other than that, like we just don't see that. So I'm excited about this for Austin Wells. But, you know, and for Paul Goldschmidt, I guess it makes him a little bit more intriguing as that sort of last ditch first baseman because you missed all the other ones. He started spring slow, but he's looked a little better lately. He's walking plenty this spring. Again, it's a small sample, but if he can get back to that 10% walk rate, which he didn't do last season, he's somewhat interesting as a leadoff man. I think maybe Aaron Boone watched a little bit too much of like Kyle Schwarber and was like, well, let's just get sluggers to lead off. It's fine. That would be good. I'm not so worried about Anthony Volpe because he's not going to go back to hitting ninth. That's key here, right? So hitting sixth stinks. He loses some at-bats, but he loses runs scored. He should get a couple more RBI out of it, but we'll see, you know, kind of how that all shakes up. Really anywhere in the tops, like the top six or seven of this lineup is quite good. As long as you don't hit eighth or ninth, you should be okay.
Looking at Roster Resource, It does list Wells as the leadoff hitter. And like you said, Volpe slotting in sixth right after Jazz Chisholm and right before Jason Dominguez, who is another guy who was rumored to possibly be in the mix for leadoff at bats. And another guy who's in that bottom third of the Yankees lineup. A little bit concerning, especially with you know, as much helium as we've seen him gain throughout draft season.
I mean, Jason Dominguez is just always going to have a lot of helium. That doesn't necessarily, like, I don't necessarily mean helium in like a sense that it's not, he doesn't deserve it, right? Like, he's been a top prospect for quite some time. He's got real power. The question is going to be contact, right? Like, how well can he avoid the strikeouts? Can he keep walking? Like, he walked quite a bit in the lower minors, a bit less so in the high minors. Not that he spent a ton of time there. So yeah, it's going to be a matter of, can he be a 2020, you know, sort of hitter? We know he's got the speed for it and all that. I just wonder, you know, his teammate Anthony Volpe went through a lot of these same, like, went through a lot of struggles, but still got to his 2020. And I just wonder if that's what we see from Jason Dominguez. You know, with how good he was in his debut in 2023, he was, you know, obviously considerably less good last year in his time. Again, both very small samples, but when you put it all in the wash, it comes out to 100 plate appearances that were not very good, right? Like, they were okay. Like, by WRC plus, they were fine for fantasy purposes. He hit 207, right? So, but he did get six home runs and six, you know, stolen bases. It's going to be, we're going to talk about this a lot today with these young guys, especially ones that have strikeouts in their game. It's going to be an up and down ride. And if you're drafting them, please don't ask me in 2 weeks if you should cut them. Because if you're picking up Jason Dominguez or the other guys we're going to talk about, you're doing it because you want to go along for the ride, right? The worst thing you can do is pick up, like, use draft capital or fab capital on one of these guys and not be ready to ride it out. Cause that's what rookies do. They have up and down seasons.
We'll move on from the Yankees and head over to the National League, where we've got a couple of maybe borderline interesting signings, especially in deeper leagues. Jose Trevino, catcher, signs for the Reds to kind of fill in for the injured Tyler Stevenson. You know, maybe fantasy relevant in the Great American Ballpark.
I mean, yeah. So it's very difficult to understate the effect that Great American Ballpark, aka Great American Small Park, has on home runs, right? Like, it's a great run environment because of home runs. Even when it's cold, you can hit home runs. And there's not really another catcher on this team that I think the Reds feel comfortable with. So he will play. However, he's not much of a hitter, right? You have to have some level of, like, hitting chops to sort of take advantage even of, like, Great American Ballpark. You have to be able to hit the ball in the air with power. That's just not something Jose Trevino does. He just doesn't hit the ball hard. So, like, he rarely barrels it up. You got to do a little bit of something to get, you know, to get interesting there. So he's more relevant as a back end second catcher that you're not really needing to pay anything for. But otherwise, you know, not so much, no.
Yeah, and like you said, he should be in line for plenty of playing time. The only other catcher listed on the Reds' projected major league roster is Austin Wins, who, as poor as Trevino has been from the plate, might be even worse.
Yeah, and let's be clear. It's not just that, you know, he's the only one, you know, that roster resources listing as on the opening day lineup. He's... Right now, Jose Trevino is the only healthy catcher on the 40-man roster, right? Austin Wins will be the second when they start the season. So that's where they're at with catcher right now.
Moving to the Braves outfield, this one may be a little bit more interesting, at least to casual fans. Alex Verdugo, former Yankees and Red Sox outfielder, signs with the Braves on a one-year deal, $1.5 million. Is this something where Braves fans should be worried, or fantasy managers should be worried about Ronald Acuña Jr.'s health? Or is this more of like an insurance policy for, you know, those guys like Profar and Kelenic and the rest of the depth there?
Yeah, so you saw the note I left, huh? Yeah, so this is less to me about Ronald Acuña Jr., right? Because if you were worried about Ronald Acuña Jr., the answer is not like, well, let's go pick up Alex Verdugo, right? So Alex Verdugo is likely coming in because, number one, the entire bench for Atlanta is right-handed. They actually don't have, like, they have plenty of left-handers in their lineup, but they don't have anyone that's, you know, that's on their bench. The current backup outfielder right now is Brian De La Cruz. He's the only one on the bench right now before Ronald Acuña Jr. comes back. And, you know, he bounced around. He was terrible for the Pirates. He really wasn't playing that well for the Marlins by the time he was done. He's not fantasy relevant because the only time he was fantasy relevant is when the Marlins had no choice but to bat him third, right? That gave him some relevance, but that was it. It was just an opportunity thing. And then when you look at Profar, I mean, he had that breakout season last year, but other than that, he's been extremely average, right? So how much hope do you want to put on a 32-year-old Jurickson Profar? You've got Jared Kelenic, who, again, was once a top five prospect and now is a guy who can seem to get hot for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time and then fizzle back out. You've got Michael Harris II, who's been hurt a lot in his short career. So you put all that stuff together and you start thinking like, oh crap, right? Like if anything happens to anyone, what is this outfield? Right? Like they've already had several injuries. It's not hard to imagine them getting another one. And if they do get another one, I think they'd feel a lot more comfortable with Alex Verdugo than Brian De La Cruz.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the American League. We've got a couple outfield transactions there. Probably only going to matter in deeper fantasy leagues. Sounds like Alan Roden has made the Blue Jays opening day roster, rookie outfielder in Toronto. And the Kansas City Royals made a move with the Brewers to acquire Mark Canha. So you got a rookie outfielder in Toronto, a veteran outfielder in Kansas City. Are either one of them at all relevant for you heading into the final week before the season?
I mean, you play in a deep enough league, everyone's relevant, right? So Mark Canha has finally gotten to the point in his career where he's traded for a player to be named later. He's finally there, right? This guy's actually found a way to play in a lot of games over the last, I don't know, 7 years. He's played quite a bit, right? Like the only time he didn't play 120 games is when there was only 60 of them, and he played 59 of those. Right. So Mark Canha has played a lot of baseball and he's played for a lot of teams over the last four or five years. He didn't really get to do anything for the Brewers besides in spring training. But, you know, Canha does bring this veteran presence to a Royals team who I guess could use it. I'm not sure he doesn't really move much of a fantasy needle. He's just going to be, I think, a bench guy for them. Someone else who can play first base. Because, yeah, I don't think they really want to put Sal Perez there all that often. And, you know, Vinny Pasquantino has had injury issues. So it gives them an option at first base, a very steady option, or is someone to kind of go in the outfield. Because their outfield is really kind of just slapped together right now, right? Like many of you probably had forgotten that Hunter Renfro is still around, but he's still around. He's hitting for the Royals in the outfield. You've got NJ Melendez, who hits the ball real hard. He's never been able to get it up in the air. You've got Kyle Isbell, who's like a decent, he's like a decent defender, I guess, but you know, he's not someone who can really hit all that well. And then they've got Dairon Blanco, who's just like a runner. He's just a speed guy in his 30s. So what's left, right? Not a lot in the outfield. So Mark Canha makes some sense for them just as a depth piece on the major league roster. As far as like Alan Roden over in Toronto, like it's cool, I guess. Again, if you're in a very deep league, he's going to be maybe a platoon guy for them. But you know, that Miles Straw is still on this. Like, it looks like he's going to make the team for no particular reason. Davis Schneider is over there. And like, again, he's just a righty and all he can do is hit home runs against lefties and really nothing else. But I do think we're going to see him be platooned one way or another. This outfield in Toronto just is scary, right? Like I think unless you're a Toronto fan, there's no way you can name more than one of the three outfielders, right? Like you've got Roden, you've got Nathan Lukes lined up for center field, apparently, because that's someone who he's 30 years old and I have no idea who he is. Not, you know, no insult to Nathan Lukes. I've just never heard of him. And that's because he's been with, you know, Toronto and Tampa Bay and a couple other teams, but he's never really played in the majors. So yeah, not a ton of intrigue there. Again, unless you're in a very deep league and you're sorting by plate appearances, these guys will get plate appearances.
Yeah, I'm looking at this Toronto Blue Jays lineup up and down, and it starts out great. It's like that meme of the horse drawing where the front looks really, really, really nice and well-detailed with Bo Bichette, Vlad Guerrero, Anthony Santander. Then you get to the middle, and it kind of like the detail gets fuzzy with Andrés Giménez and Alejandro Kirk and George Springer. And then you get to the bottom third, and it's just like a sketch of like two legs and a tail, and like looks like a second grader drew it. And that's your Roden, Ernie Clement, and Nathan Lukes in the bottom third here. And it's just not looking good for the Blue Jays.
Yeah. Like it's hard to feel great about this lineup. If coming into the season, I was to tell you, like, don't worry guys, Andrés Giménez is going to hit fourth. Everything's going to be fine. You don't feel fine. You don't hear that. Like Andrés Giménez has some strengths as a hitter, but it doesn't make you feel fine as like your number four guy. Like you really like him to be either like he's going to lead off because he puts the ball in play, even though he never walks, or you're like, yeah, let's bat him ninth for the old second leadoff man sort of weird logic that people have. But no, fourth is Andrés Giménez.
We'll stay in the AL East here with two more injuries before we go to break. Gunnar Henderson is going to miss the start of the season. He's going to be put on IL with that oblique injury he suffered in spring training. Doesn't sound like he's going to miss a ton of time. So we should hopefully see him back within a week or two for the Orioles. Does that affect your opinion of Gunnar? I know we've talked about kind of this injury not really affecting your opinion of Gunnar Henderson, but did you know any worries whatsoever for the Orioles shortstop?
As long as he's healthy to start the season, he's still going to be able to play like 145 to 150 games, right? Like that's actually still in play, right? Cause they play 162 of them. He played 159 last year, but I still think he can get to, you know, again, 145, 150 games. And that means, again, most of you have already drafted. By the time you're listening to this, you've probably already drafted. And there's nothing, I think, to really be worried about, right? Like, your season is not in jeopardy already because you're going to miss Gunnar Henderson for what would generally be two cold, miserable weeks on the Atlantic coast, right? So, you know, better now than later because they're giving him time to get healthy. I think that's the important thing here. It's okay starting on the IL. He's going to get time to get healthy, kind of get into a groove and then get going. When these injuries happen in the middle of the year, especially as teams are trying to stay competitive in their divisions, guys have a tendency to come back faster, not get fully healed up and just kind of play through it. You're better off letting him kind of get healthy from here. And, you know, once he comes back, just let him take over.
One more injury. Athletics second baseman Zach Gelof has a hamate fracture in his hand. He's going to get surgery. He's going to begin the season on the IL. Sounds like they're going to shut him down for a little while. Gelof is a drop or a do not draft if you haven't completed your draft yet, right?
I mean, that's what he was before, and he remains that way. Max Muncy, the other Max Muncy, is the one who will likely get, you know, I think he's going to get the shot. He struggled with strikeouts in the minor leagues. You don't generally see that improve when guys come to the major leagues. So that's a little bit of a concern, but it's the A's and they don't have a lot of other options. They've got a couple guys on this team that could like play second base, but I guess, right? Like Luis Urias could kind of do it, but you know, they're not going in that direction. You know, you're not holding Gelof in anything but like an only league, and you're not really picking up Max Muncy in anything except for like an only league. Because again, we're talking about the number nine hitter for the the Athletics. You know, and this team, you know, you really only want the top half of this lineup. One thing I do want to say about Zach Gelof is he's a really good example of why we talk about guys. Why we care about guys with contact issues, because it's hard to believe this, but this was a player who had 17 home runs and 25 stolen bases last year and still finished outside the top 150 hitters. And that's because he hit .211 with a .270 OBP and only had 109 combined runs in RBI. even though he played the majority of the year, 138 games, like power and speed are cool, but they're not everything. There are actually all the other categories you have to do. He didn't do any of those. And a lot of that is just because he really struggles at making contact in the zone. I mean, he really just kind of struggles with contact generally, but he really struggles with contact in the zone. His rate is, you know, first career 75.9%. Generally, the cutoff is about 80. Once you get below 80, very, very few players can succeed in major leagues if you can't hit 4 out of 5 in the zone that you swing at, right? Even if you don't like put it in play, you got to touch it, right? You got to try to touch 4 out of 5 that you get in the zone. Gioff was more like 3 out of 4, and it doesn't sound like much, but again, very, very few players survive under 80%. You can count on one hand, right? Some of them do it to great success, right? Aaron Judge can get away with it, but that's because when he does put his bat on it, he sends it 500 feet in the other direction. But most players just cannot live that way.
Well, we'll take a quick break. When we get back, we'll talk about Scott's top 300 hitters list, his most recent update, and we'll get into some guys that we're looking forward to seeing come Thursday. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks, your home for hitters on the pitcherlist.com. Let's talk about the pitcher list draft kit real quick before we get going. There's a whole bunch of cool tools and features inside the draft kit for PL Plus and PL Pro subscribers. Make sure you check that out if you haven't already. I just got finished with my home league using the Draft Assistant web tool. It's in beta. It's brand new this year. Definitely worth taking a look at. Helped me through the draft and definitely helped me get the guys that I wanted and make sure that I optimized my draft, making sure that I got the guys that I needed. Scott, what's your favorite thing about the draft kit? And what's the thing that you've utilized the most this draft season?
Yeah. So what I really like are actually the ranks and articles, which aren't they're not like some of the priority stuff. Like they're not some of the premium tools that are in there. I mean, I do love Kyle's premium tools, watching like 80, like there's a cool ADP tracker in there from the NFBC that shows like a rolling NFBC ADP. So you can kind of see trends on guys. To kind of get and also comes with like who's gone up the most in the last 7 or 14 days and who's gone down the most. So those are really, really interesting because they get me to look. A lot of times oh yeah, because he got hurt, or oh yeah, because he's going to make the team. But there's other interesting movement that happens in there as well, just seeing over time how everything changes. But what I'll say also is this: don't throw your draft prep away yet, right? Even if you had your draft, don't throw it away yet. Because your draft, the stuff you have in your draft prep is much more valuable than 1 week's worth of baseball games, right? It just is, because 1 week's worth of baseball games tells us incredibly little other than maybe about playing time. But as far as the actual evaluations for a guy, by the end of 1 week, we're going to have seen what, one start from a pitcher. We're going to have seen, a handful, 25 30 plate appearances for most guys. There's lots of days off that happen earlier in the year, depending on where you are geographically, just because the weather is still kind of crappy up here in the north, the northern Midwest and the northern, along the eastern seaboard there. Weather's not great. So there's a lot of missed time. Don't throw away the draft prep, right? Like if you're looking for another pitcher, don't go to the results yet. Go to what Nick wrote about these pitchers. All that stuff is still true. You have to sometimes you have to change, like, in the draft kit, we talk about how we hope this guy's the number four pitcher, and now we found out he is the number four pitcher. Great. But like the evaluation that's there, right? Or like these blurbs that I write, most of them remain true after 1 week of baseball. They'll probably remain true after 2 weeks of baseball, right? And you're going to have this tendency to jump straight into your waiver wire and say, what has he done for me lately? What have they done in the first 7 days, the first 15 days? And that is a major disservice to yourself, because that is mostly random, right? We're talking 2 weeks of baseball. So keep that draft prep stuff. Set up your watch. In fact, better yet, use it to create a watch list now. Get rid of the noise of 1 week of action, right? Yeah. Every year we used to talk about Jed freaking Lowry. He would have these hot starts to the year every year. And everyone would ask me, Scott, what about Jed Lowry? Jed Lowry remained Jed Lowry, right? He was always Jed Lowry, and he was hot for a couple of weeks. And that was it. That was it. And that it was just noise to get in your way towards fantasy greatness. It's trying to stop you. Look beyond that and put dudes on your watch list that have talent, right? Or that are maybe just awaiting an opportunity, or that have an opportunity and you want to see what they're going to do with it. But don't let the spring stats, the first week of baseball stats, that's all noise, folks. It's noise.
Well, let's separate the noise and get into your top 300 hitters list here. You made a recent update to the list, updated on March 21st, and we'll just hit on a couple of key guys here that you updated some content on. Let's jump right into Braves outfielder Ronald Acuna. In your most recent update, you kind of talked about the formats and the reasons why you're taking them in certain formats and why you're avoiding them in some others. Do you mind just talking us through that?
Yeah, it's a little counterintuitive. So with Ronald Acuna Jr. in a 3 outfield league, on one hand, you would think that's the place to grab him because you're like, oh, the replacement level is really high. I'll be able to replace him if he gets hurt, blah, blah, blah. The problem is that it's also super deep, right? So like outfield, in many cases, what you're going to find is that after the first, like even 2 rounds of your draft, you might already have 2 outfielders because that's the way the draft worked out, right? Which actually pulls Acuna off your board probably because you don't need to address your 3rd outfield spot in the first like 5 rounds. So a lot of folks are going to run into that, which is something I have run into quite a bit, especially with how much I'm scooping up guys in the first round, like Kyle Tucker, or Yordan Alvarez. I start there and there's just a ton of outfield talent at the top. So in those leagues, it's harder for me to take Acuna unless the draft is played out a certain way. Now, in 5 outfield leagues where you need a lot of outfield, I actually kind of like taking Acuna because he is falling a lot. Because, again, in that format, people are more sensitive to injury. They're like, oh, the replacement level's lower. I don't know what I'm going to do. And, again, I get it. That risk is real. But the opportunity to grab that risk is even better because he does tend to fall in those drafts. And I can plan for it, right? Because it's not happening so early. You know, it's not like a first-round pick and then I've got to do it. It's later. So I like taking him in some of those deeper formats also because it is very hard to find guys, even starting in round like 4 or 5 in those deeper leagues, who have top 5 overall player upside. And Ronald Acuna is still that, right? So I like being able to grab him in those leagues. And I still have room in my outfield to do so. What's really happening is he kind of moves down the list because, you know, I found like I've got a lot of outfielders at the top already. I'm finding outfield is something I'm attacking very early and then waiting a long time to kind of clean up just because you can, again, you're starting with so much talented outfield. You then can just wait because your 3rd outfielder, there's so many guys who are capable of being a 3rd outfielder in fantasy leagues. And in that 3 outfield format, once you have your top 2, you can really just wait and wait and wait and wait and wait. And then like Nick Castellanos will be waiting for you in round like 20. For no particular reason. So you just grab him, right? You grab some outfielder who falls way too far. So that's the strategy I keep using. And, you know, sort of in accordance with that, Acuna comes down because these ranks are for 3 outfield leagues. And I just, he's sort of in this area of outfield that I just don't really seem to attack at all.
Yeah. Acuna is definitely a guy that, like you said, could be a top 5 outfielder. And if you're getting him in, you know, the 5th, 6th round in some drafts, in my home league, it's a 3 outfielder. Now, granted, it's a 10 team league, but he fell to pick 82. He was drafted in the 9th round. It was crazy.
Well, there you go. I'm in there. I'm all. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, if you can get him, if you can wait on him and get him late, or like you said, in those deeper formats, take him as your 2nd outfielder and kind of backfill with those late outfielders. I love that strategy. Let's shift to Alex Bregman, newly acquired Red Sox 3rd baseman. And I say 3rd baseman because that's where he's going to play. We kind of got some suboptimal news earlier this week that it doesn't look like he's going to get the 2nd base starts, which will limit his position flexibility in fantasy. But that doesn't seem to matter to you, Scott. Why are you ending up with Alex Bregman in so many places?
Well, number one, he is going to bat 3rd for this team, right? Like Alex Bregman actually is a very, you know, he's a very good fielder at 3rd base. He really just had no business moving to 2nd base. So it makes sense why they're not doing that. But this is a guy who we talked about in previous episodes is really well built for, you know, for Fenway Park. It's not, again, it's not going to be a great place for home runs for him. But this dude is going to smack doubles off that wall constantly, right? And he's going to do so with, you know, good hitters around him in the lineup with Jaron Duran, Rafael Devers, Tristan Casas will be behind him. He's in a great opportunity to succeed. And especially since we found out that he's only going to be third base, people have kind of moved him down their ranks, but adding second base eligibility just didn't, to me, it didn't actually add that much, right? It wasn't like, oh, well, now I've got to move him down. If anything, I realized I had him ranked too low to begin with. So I kind of slid him back up. I do think some of those walks are going to come back. This is a very, very good player who can absolutely, you know, go back to something a little closer to what he was in like 2022, 2023, which is, you know, a close to 1-to-1 walk to strikeout ratio, plenty of counting stats at the top of this Boston lineup. There's a lot to like there. And I think people are overlooking it for some reason, just because he's not going to be a second baseman. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the Red Sox address their second base situation, and I guess we'll get to that later in the pod. Moving on to another third baseman in the American League, Texas Rangers third baseman Josh Jung. Scott, what's going on with Josh Jung, and why don't we like it?
So he started spring barely striking out, and it was awesome. And then he struck out basically every single time for like four games. Like, it's all he did. And now he's back to not strike. He's only two strikeouts in his last three games. It just, what this really reminds us is that, you know, Josh Jung is just going to be a roller coaster. This is going to be a roller coaster all season long until some of that decision-making cleans up. He's got some contact problems too, which makes it even harder because it's not just a decision thing. It's like, even when he makes the right decision, he'll often miss. So it's going to be a challenge. And the reason we put up with it is because there is 25 to 30 home run upside here, and you get him so late. I love him as like a late pick, especially in like these 12 teamers where he's basically free. I like that pick. Plenty of playing time there. Texas is going to let him play through this. It's just going to be an up and down thing. So you got to be ready for that.
Yeah, his profile kind of reminds me of Tyler O'Neill a little bit, in that he's just so streaky, although O'Neill has a little bit more of the trending health issues. But just from a hitter standpoint, they kind of remind me of each other a little bit.
Oh, the injuries also remind me of both of them. They've both really struggled with injuries, especially, you know, just in the last few seasons. But again, you know, with Josh Jung, it's going to be a ride, right? Like, it's something I mentioned earlier. This is going to be something that comes up and down, but there's a reason we keep waiting for this guy to break out. And it's because he's got big raw power. And I don't think these injuries have just like removed it from his body. The question will be, look, he's never going to walk a lot, but he's walking more this spring, which is great. He's never going to walk a lot. So can he get the strikeouts down low enough to keep him from being an absolute, you know, boat anchor on your ratios and killing you and killing this team's lineup, where they either push him to the bottom of the lineup or start platooning him? That would also be bad. Again, you're not really trying to rely on Josh Jung in a 10 or 12 team league. That would be a bad place to be as your third baseman, but I like him as a late scoop just to see if you get like a really nice power piece out of this.
Now, speaking of potential power pieces, we've got a Houston Astros outfielder. He's actually, I think, came up as a third baseman, might be third base eligible.
Well, he is a third baseman. He is not an outfielder. We'll get to that, but he's not an outfielder.
So it's Houston Astros third baseman playing outfield, Cam Smith. I don't know what he's doing, but he's going to make the opening day roster for Houston, and it looks like he's going to start in right field for the Astros. Help me out here. What are the Astros seeing that maybe we're not?
Hope, right? So Cam Smith has hit four home runs this spring, which is great, right? Don't get me wrong. That is great. But he's not actually hitting all that well of late, right? So he started out spring really, really hot. Again, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say he never hit this spring, but, and I know it's only, you know, before today's games, it's Sunday, before today's games, he was hitting .222 over the previous six games, but that's not really the problem. The problem is more that he's striking out a boatload and not walking. Like, in those six games, he struck out 38.9% of the time and did not walk, right? And he struck out more again today. so it's a problem, right? Adjusting. I talked about this last episode. It's hard to adjust to major league hitting. It's difficult. And Cam Smith just has not seen very much upper level pitching at all, even in the spring, right? Like mostly you get an average of about double A over the course of spring, right? So I'm really concerned. And it's not as though the Astros don't have other options to play in the outfield, right? Like Chaz McCormick, you know, a year ago today was a mid-round fantasy pick because he had such a great 2023, right? And I don't think this team has totally given up on him yet. I understand that the Astros are excited about this kid's bat, and they should be, right? Cam Smith brings a lot to the table in terms of upside. The problem is he looks terrible in the outfield, right? He does not look like he's really able to handle that very well defensively at all, right? And he's so inexperienced at a professional level. It's such a hard transition to make. Now, if you can get him as a reserve pick, a bench guy, absolutely. Hopefully you've already had your draft and that was possible, right? But don't go dumping all your fab on this. If someone just asked me what they should bid in fab in like a 1000 fab league, I think 100's too high, right? Like you're not spending 10%. I wouldn't spend 10% of my budget on this because it's a lot of risk for a guy who will be very easy for the team to send down. It's you know too easy to send him down. So I'm a little concerned at the level of hype, not about the player. I think long-term, this is still a very, very good player. I think the level of hype and anyone expecting him to come out the gate and just start smashing, like that's not even happening right now, right? Like right now, last seven games, that's not happening, right? But he has played himself onto this roster, which is not exactly what we saw from, I'm just going to skip ahead in our little notes here. That's not what we've seen from Christian Campbell. Christian Campbell's going to be the opening, you know, the opening second, you know, the opening day second baseman. And it makes no sense to me because he's been objectively bad at the plate all spring. Christian Campbell has not done anything that we like. Like all this, I really get concerned when a player is getting a bunch of additional helium and his performance has not improved, right? Like he hit a home run Saturday, which is cool, right? His first home run of the spring. He's slugging .283 this spring in 56 plate appearances. He has a 30% strikeout rate, right? He's walking a bunch. I'll give him that. But he's hitting .174, slugging .283. It's a 61 WRC plus. He's one of the worst hitters in the spring. He didn't play his way onto this team. This team just decided he was their second baseman, right? Like he didn't, there's no way in heck that this batting line wins a position battle unless it was already determined you were going to win it, right? So Christian Campbell, now he has more experience than Cam Smith in the minor leagues. He's shown us that there is some definite up. I mean, obviously there's upside. He's shown us that he can probably handle major league pitching given some time. And if he played a whole season, I think he could be a 2020 guy who it's like .250, albeit from, you know, close to the bottom of the Red Sox order. I'm not sure we see him up in the major leagues that whole time, unless he's got to have to be pretty successful. This isn't like an Anthony Volpe situation where they were like, well, you're the guy all year. We're going to, you know, ride or die, ups or downs. We're going to do it. I don't think that's what we're going to get from Christian Campbell. I think if we see really any kind of struggles, right, they'll be pretty quick to go get David Hamilton, pull him in. I think when Masataka Yoshida gets healthy and they can't DH Rafael Devers, they're going to have yet another discussion about what they're going to do with Alex Bregman and Rafael Devers, because they're going to want to get Masataka Yoshida in sometimes. And they're sure as heck not going to do it in the outfield. So, you know, we're going to have to see what happens there. You know, how do they move everything around? Do they maybe move Trevor Story to second base and put Rafaelia in at like short, but then who plays center? I guess that's Jaron Duran. And then maybe there's a lot of moving parts to this roster that we're just not entirely sure how that's all going to play out. And let's not forget Marcelo Mayer is going to be in the minors, and I think they're eager to see him. You know, he's a shortstop by trade, but he could definitely play second base. Nick Sogard was having a good spring. I wouldn't be shocked if they just kind of bring him up to fill in a gap if Christian Campbell's clearly struggling. Vaughn Grissom, they sent down earlier, but they traded Chris Sale for this guy. Like at some point you think they're going to give him a shot in the major leagues. They have him on the 40-man roster. So at some point he's going to get a shot. There's so many moving parts. I think Christian Campbell is certainly someone you can go pick up, but I'm not getting rid of like a top 100, you know, top 125 guy to do it. Right. Like I rank I rank Spencer Torkelson above both those guys coming into the year. And that's still going to be true, right? When the first real hitter list comes out, the Wednesday before opening day, which is the 26th, not long after this comes out, you know, with the top 150, Spencer Torkelson's going to be above these guys, probably because I know what he can do at the major league level. I've watched him hit 30 home runs at the major league level, and he's got a very solid job for at least a month or two until Matt Vierling comes back. But the helium is always with the guys who haven't been up yet, right? That's Christian Campbell. That's Cam Smith. And again, I really want these guys to succeed. I think Cam Smith is not in a very good position to do so because he's learning a new position that he's not very good at. And he's really struggling with strikeouts this spring of late. And with Christian Campbell, he just didn't hit at all this spring, which I can forgive because he has such a strong minor league track record. But I'd really like to know how he's going to adapt to major league pitching. Right. We don't know that yet. And the few major league pitch, the little major league pitching he did see this spring, he did not hit. So, you know, it's definitely a big question mark. And I struggle to get fully on board with the hype. And I can do it with Spencer Torkelson, but that's because hype means I ranked him like 140th. Right. Like I can get behind that. Like, again, that's a reserve guy. Right. I have him as a reserve guy everywhere. That hype, I'm all of these guys, I am on board as a reserve man. If you are drafting Christian Campbell, Spencer Torkelson, or Cam Smith to help your team, even in April, I think you're making a mistake, right? You hope they will help your team in April, but you can't say these guys will help my team in April. Nobody has that kind of certainty about these players.
Scott, rebellions were built on hope.
And most of them get crushed by oppressive forces. They all die, Brett. They all die. If you've seen any of the movies about the rebellions, they all die. Very few, like America kind of stands out. Everyone, like, and even with that, lots of people die, Brett. Like, hope gets people killed, and that's okay because that's how we make change in this world. But this is fantasy baseball, and there's only so much hope I can, like, that I can carry water for as we enter the season.
We'll take a break. We'll take a break as we cool off, and we'll get back with some sleepers and flyers. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. We're talking about hitters, the top 300 hitters list. Scott has put together a great resource for those drafting and for those going through their first cycle of fab bids this Sunday. If you haven't used it yet, make sure you check it out. Scott's putting out his preseason update or the final hitters list update on Wednesday, March 26th, the day before opening day. Let's get into some sleepers and flyers, guys that kind of stay on the board. They're listed past hitter number 140. So really, these are the guys that are late round kind of lottery tickets for fantasy teams. Scott and I are going to go over a couple of our favorites and talk about just who we like and why we like them. Scott, lead us off with one of your favorite guys that's going, you know, after hitter 140.
Yeah, I'm going to go way, way, way later than hitter 140. This is mostly for deeper leagues, but someone to just keep an eye on in case something happens. It's Brett Beatty. He was at one time a top 50 prospect at third base. The Mets are going to probably start him at second base to start the season. And look, he hits way too many ground balls, way too many. And he's hit a lot this spring as well, but he's getting another shot. And if he can get the ball off the ground half the time, right? Just keep the ground ball rate under 50%. There really could be something here. And it's something who's absolutely free, who may be on your waiver wires, right? Is he the best thing on your waiver wires? Probably not, but he is out there on your waiver wire. And it's someone who, you know, maybe just kind of throw on your watch list, see what happens.
Yeah, he'd be a great pickup for those Royce Lewis fantasy managers who just lost their stud third baseman to yet another injury. So Beatty, definitely a great shout and somebody who should be available in most, you know, most leagues that have already drafted for sure. We'll move on to one of my guys. And I feel like this is almost cheating, Scott, because he's listed at number 141. We said kind of that landmark of that arbitrary landmark of hitter number 140. But this guy I just keep ending up with doesn't really matter the format for me, just because I feel like the ceiling could be so high. It's Tommy Edman, the Los Angeles Dodgers utility man. And it's not just because I saw him play real baseball last week. I just think that there's a ton of opportunity for Edman to play and play well in one of the best lineups in baseball. And I'm really excited about his potential return to what he was in, 2022 and 2023, when he went for, 13 home runs, 30 stolen bases.
Yeah. And he's healthy, right? That's the important thing for him this spring. It's cool that he's hit some home runs this spring. It's cool that he hit a home run in a major league game, right? That's fun. But the reality is that he's healthy. And he's the type of player the Dodgers just seem to love, right? Because, like, what is Tommy Edman but the newest version of, like, Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez, right? Who are also still on the team, but, like, they're bringing in the new guy, right? The new guy that can sort of play the infield, probably play the outfield, and we'll just kind of see what happens. So he is someone who's definitely got that 15-25 sort of upside. It feels like he's been injured a lot more than he has in his career. He's actually been quite healthy. It's really just last season that we lost him for a whole bunch of time. But yeah, with Tommy Edman, I'm definitely on board. Someone who can be in your middle infield, someone who should play when healthy. And the fact that he hits towards the bottom of this lineup doesn't really bother me, because the Dodgers lineup is super deep. And I think he's going to keep getting opportunities. He's going to keep playing. So yeah, absolutely. I think, there's the other, like, full-time players on this team get drafted quite a bit earlier for the most part, because they're superstars. But, Tommy Edman does deserve, I think, a little bit more than even more credit than even I've been giving him so far in draft season.
Well, let's talk about maybe, I know we talked about kind of flyers and lottery tickets, but there's some guys down here that have some pretty high floors that could really fill in. If you suffer an early season injury, one of those guys that kind of piques my interest is Jake Cronenworth, first baseman for the San Diego Padres. He's one of those guys that's just super consistent, kind of feels like he's, got one of the best abilities in, one of his best abilities is availability. He just seems to always be on the field and just always be doing something productive for fantasy teams. What do you think about Cronenworth this spring?
He is exciting is the wrong word. It's absolutely the wrong word, but he is that sort of quintessential replacement level guy. We talk about, this is how he is versus replacement level. He is replacement level, right? And that's okay, right? If you have a last minute first base, second base hole that you need to fill, those are tough positions to fill in free agency, right? Because you're looking at other lame guys, right? Like, if you're missing a first baseman and you're in a 12 team league that's fairly competitive, like, what are you looking at? Jamer Candelario, right? Like, yeah, he plays for the Reds, but he's also not very good, and he played for the Reds before and he wasn't that good, right? So Jake Cronenworth, he plays a lot, he hits in a decent spot in the lineup. He isn't going to wow you, right? There was a little bit of hype with him when he first got up to the majors because he had a nice debut, but we know exactly what he is, and that's okay, because there's some value in that while you're sort of also watching to see how other guys shake out, right? Like, especially if you don't have a specific need, right? If you're just thinking, I just need a guy in first base, I feel good about most of my stats. I just need someone to kind of be in there and get some counting stats, get some runs, get some RBI, keep my ratios alive. That is what Jake Cronenworth can do, right? Because let's say you need power. Jake Cronenworth doesn't have a lot of that. And I guess you could go get Reese Hoskins, but it's going to hurt your ratios, right? And there are some questions about exactly what Reese Hoskins can be over the course of a full season, because last season wasn't that great, right? And Christian Encarnacion Strand, who I think has a lot of upside and a lot of power, and we don't know how much he's going to play, right? It's a lot of questions. So if you're not really in the mood to have those, like, to have questions, especially in these leagues where maybe you have to spend pretty much all of your bench spots on pitchers, which is a lot of leagues, Jake Cronenworth serves quite a bit of value that he can come in. He can play corner infield, middle infield, first base, second base, and be a guy you don't really have to worry about while you wait for your team to get healthy or you wait for a breakout star.
I love that. And speaking of, you know, breakout stars, I know we talked about Torkelson earlier in this episode, but I know that you're super excited about him this year. Talk me into drafting Spencer Torkelson because I don't have any shares yet.
Well, he's one of the greatest college hitters of our lifetime, former number one overall pick. And I think what's tough is that, like, let's be real. He had a very bad season last year, right? He played 92 games. He only hit 10 home runs. He hit 219. I get it. It wasn't good. He's been excellent this spring. He's done a couple things this spring that are really nice to kind of see. Number one, I've only watched him a little bit, and I'm not a great judge. I'm not a great judge of defense, especially at first base. But, you know, folks, you know, like Jason Beck over at MLB.com are saying that he's improved quite a bit defensively and that he's serviceable there. He doesn't only have to DH. Now, I don't think he's going to be the first baseman on opening day. I think he's going to be the DH. But the fact that he can play that position gives that team flexibility. That's something AJ Hinch likes. He wants some guys who can maybe, you know, be someone on the roster can be that backup first baseman, especially while Matt Beerling's out. More importantly, in 2023, Spencer Torkelson hit 31 home runs and had 94 RBI despite a slow start. We talk a lot about hype on what guys could be. This is something Torkelson actually was relatively recently, right? And just because, like, we always talk about how if you show a skill, you own it. And I'm not a full believer in that sort of philosophy, but this is this guy was at one time a top five prospect in all of baseball. That one time was fairly recently. And has shown us that he does have this power. The spring's been great. And look, it's a rental, right? You're not paying a ton to get him, right? Like, you're like, oh, I don't have any shares. That's because you were focusing on something else in round, you know, 20, right? Like, that's okay. With Spencer Torkelson, you're really just seeing like, hey, for 3 weeks, right? What happens? Does he, because you don't ever have to start him even, right? Just say, hey, let's hold on to him, because if he starts hitting a couple home runs, showing some heat, you've got a 30 home run hitter that you paid nothing for, right? That's where the hype is. The hype is because I can rank him at 140 among hitters, and that's much higher than his ADP, right? That's fun. That's what I'm after, right? That's value. That's a guy who might even, if you drafted earlier in the spring, he might be on your wire right now, because people thought he was going to get sent down to the minors, because he probably was, but then some injuries happened, new opportunities came, and here he goes.
Yeah, I love that. And in round 20, I was drafting Tommy Edman, so it was fine. Like, it's
everybody wins. Everybody wins. Great. Yeah, like, that's the thing is, look, in a very, very deep league, I get it. You'd rather have the safety of Andrew Vaughn, right? The safety of Jake Cronenworth. There's nothing wrong with those guys. But in a 12-team league, your bench is mostly for upside. If you have the ability to bench hitters, you're mostly shooting for upside, right? Spencer Torkelson is upside. Again, you might not be in that position and you want safety, and I get that. But if not, I really like going with Spencer Torkelson later in the draft. Now, that doesn't mean I don't like safety plays, right? Like, a guy I've ended up with quite a bit in mocks and real drafts is Brendan Donovan. He's not exciting. Right. He's mostly a ratios guy, second base outfield eligible for the Cardinals. He's not looking like he's going to be the leadoff guy for them for reasons I can't quite explain, because he's a pretty good leadoff guy, but they like Mason Winn. It moves Brendan Donovan down to like fifth in the lineup, but he's going to play every day when he's healthy. And he actually gets the job done, right? Like, he's not amazing, but this was a top 100 hitter last year. Right. He was a top 10 second baseman last year, even though, again, the stat line won't blow you away, but it's 14 home runs, 65 RBI, 14 home runs, 65 runs scored, 73 RBI, 278 average. He rarely strikes out. You know, he's been awful this spring, but he's a veteran. I don't really care. He does a lot of things, and he's available very, very late because none of those things jump off the board. But again, he's eligible at a lot of positions, well, really two important ones. And then depending on your league settings, he might be eligible at even more. But I mean, he's the type of player that I kind of love scooping up late if I'm trying to fill in some risk or I need some ratios, because those aren't always easy to get. Again, if you're in Yahoo leagues, he's actually eligible at second, third, and outfield. So that's middle infield, corner infield, and outfield. So he can cover a lot of space. And as I've mentioned before, some of these leagues, you only get like one bench spot for hitters. And while I do love chasing upside, the other really good argument to make is I chase versatility so that I can always, if you have him on your bench, right? If you have Brendan Donovan on your bench, that means you have your backup second baseman, your backup third baseman, and your backup outfielder. So if you lose your second baseman, third baseman, or outfielder, you're not going to the wire for specifically a second baseman, specifically a third baseman, or specifically an outfielder. You actually can go for any of them because Brendan Donovan can fill the spot that's empty, right? And now, wherever you had him before, right? Now you can look at the entire hitting pool for what you want to add, right? You're not forcing yourself to pick up, you know, some second baseman you never really wanted because you have to have a second baseman. Brendan Donovan is there to fill that gap for you so you can chase a much wider player pool. If you can't chase upside, like if the upside guys you wanted aren't there for your last one reserve spot, the other great use, again, a versatile player like Brendan Donovan, who does a little bit of everything. He doesn't run really, but he does a little bit of everything else. He does it quite well and brings you a lot of flexibility that you can then use as you're like, we're going to have more guys go down, right? Early in the year, that's just what happens. So having that piece you can move around is going to be very valuable to you, especially if you get very few hitters for your bench.
Yeah, I love that shout. And I feel like just the Cardinals lineup in general has been completely overlooked this draft season. So I'm on board with that as well. Scott, any last messages for listeners as we wrap the final show before opening day?
Yeah. Like I said, don't throw away your draft prep, right? We're going to talk about the early hitters, right? We're going to talk about the guys that go off in spring. We're going to talk about the random dude who's going to hit like two or three home runs in the opening series, right? We're going to do that and it's going to be fun. Don't get me wrong, right? Like that's all right. But your draft prep is going to be a lot more valuable than that, right? Your draft prep is the thing that's going to help you most for the first couple of weeks, right? Because, okay, cool. Carlos Santana hits three home runs opening weekend. Who cares? Right? Like I'm sure Carlos Santana does. I'm sure his family does. I'm sure Guardians fans do, right? That's cool. But in fantasy, we don't care. We know what Carlos Santana is. He's a deep, deep, deep reserve first baseman, right? Like it's not very interesting. I'm sorry, right? What if Baldy Young over in Washington hits a bazillion home runs? I don't care because he'll do it for 2 weeks and then strike out a million times and we'll all forget about him, right? Like nothing some of these guys do should change what you had in your draft prep because they are what they are and these things are within the realms of possibility, right? The other thing I would say is this is a great time to be ready to quick pull up a rolling chart. You can do it. We have our own PLV ones. They're really great. You can also go to Fangraphs. It's not something you don't have to know math to do this. You can go to Fangraphs. You can click on the player graphs tool. You will get a rolling chart. If you just change the time frame from by year to by game, you click by game, all of a sudden you've got a rolling chart. And what that will tell you, right? We're going to have a lot of noisy stats. We're going to have a lot of like, oh man, he's hitting 500. Well, yeah, for five games, right? But the rolling chart will really put into context of like, what has this guy been capable of before? Am I really seeing something new after 2 weeks? Or is this within the normal range of outcomes, right? So a great example would be Brendan Donovan. I can use Brendan Donovan and tell you that, you know, I like Brendan Donovan, but he doesn't have a lot of power. 15 home runs is probably it. But let's say for 2 weeks, Brendan Donovan slugs 640, right? Is this all of a sudden going to change my evaluation of Brendan Donovan? Well, actually, no. He's done that several times in the last few years, right? Where he's had these short spurts where he slugs, you know, 650, right? He's done that. And that's cool. But what it tells me is unless he's doing that in some sustained way, it's not really a change. And conversely, what if Brendan Donovan has 2 weeks and he's not even slugging 200? Do I think something's broken? Do I think something's off? No, he's done that a couple times too, right? Because all these rolling charts have ups and downs, right? So it's going to give you a sense of like, is this really the worst he's ever been? Or does it just feel that way because it's the start of the season and it's the only stats we have, right? We haven't been able to put it all through the wash yet and have everything sort of average out. Rolling charts will really help you keep your head on straight in these early goings to say, look, this is within the range of outcomes we've seen from this player before. Like, don't let Aaron Judge's bad month last year. Like, don't be one of those people that reacted to it, right? Aaron Judge had a really bad start to the season last year, and it was absolutely within his normal range of outcomes. He slumps, right? And when he does, it's pretty ugly because he swings a fair bit and he strikes out a ton and it looks terrible. But we know that that's just part of his game. And then he goes off and slugs 1,000 for a month, right? Because he's Aaron Judge. The rolling charts would have told you that and told you that you don't really need to react to those things. I know it's going to feel like you have to. I'm not saying you should never react to anything, but use those rolling charts to get an understanding of what these players are, especially in smaller samples, and understand what variation can exist in these smaller samples. Juan Soto is probably the most dependable, reliable player that's out there, but he does not have a 400 OBP every week, right? He doesn't have a 350 OBP every week or for every 2 weeks, right? These things come up and down. So understand the range of outcomes so you're not overreacting to these early samples. It's the best thing to do to protect yourself from yourself.
Excellent. Yeah, highly endorse the rolling charts. If you haven't checked them out, make sure you do. Kyle Bland does some awesome work for Pitcher List, and we appreciate all the things that he's put together. Scott, another person who does awesome work for Pitcher List, we appreciate you. Looking forward to your top 300 hitters list coming on Wednesday, the most recent update before the season starts. And we'll be watching some baseball on Thursday, opening day. All right, that does it for Hacks and Jacks 115. Thanks for listening. I'm Brett Ford. He's Scott Chu. We'll be back next week.